Hello and welcome to Goodbye to All That, Pop Break's after party for our favorite shows. Today, we are here to talk about the first season of Netflix's Firefly Lane, based on the novel by Kristen Hanna. Joining me today, I am happy to welcome back to the show returning guest Manish Mathur, who is the host of podcasts such as Queer Now and celebrating its two-year anniversary this week, It Pod to Be You. Thank you so much for coming back, Manish.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be back and talking with you about this show.
Yeah, it's going to be, I can't wait to get into it. I also want to congratulate you on your two-year anniversary for It Pod to Be You.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love that you, for people who don't know, it's this podcast about, well, Manish, you tell them.
Yeah, well, initially it started out as a podcast about romantic comedies, but I've been sort of branching out to other subgenres within the romance realm. So basically, the podcast is I invite guests to talk about their favorite romance movies. I had Alex on to talk about Broadcast News. This is back in the early days of the show. And but for the two-year anniversary, I decided to tackle Richard Linklater's Before trilogy, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. So I had like 2.5 hours, like 4 guests talking about, you know, the 3 movies, and a lot of fun. And I'm really, really excited that it's out there. So if you're interested in anything that I just said, please go over to Pod2BU. And download that and check it out and hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, those are some of my favorite films of all time, so I can't wait to listen to. I mean, you would have made that thing 6 hours and I would have been all over it. So.
I know. It was very hard to keep it at the length that I kept it. I wanted to go longer with each of my guests.
I admire your restraint. But this week on the show, we're going to be talking about two other kinds of star-crossed lovers, and that is of the platonic variety. And that's because we're going to be talking about Firefly Lane. As I said, this is a show that is based off of a novel. It's actually based off of a novel that had a sequel to it as well, which is interesting because when I first heard about this project, I just assumed that it was going to be a mini series, but I guess once I learned, oh, there's a sequel attached to it, I was like, oh, here we are, we're going to be in for it for a few seasons, and sure enough, by the end of this season, it certainly left off on a number of cliffhangers. But if you haven't seen the show, I just wanted to briefly read the IMDb description, because I think it is, it just made me laugh when I saw that this is how they summed up the show. They say, Tully and Kate support each other through good times and bad with an unbreakable bond that carries them from teens to their 40s. And that is true, but it certainly is only scratching the surface of what this show is. And that means that we get to really dive deep on this episode. But to start out, we should really kind of focus on Tully and Kate as characters and who portrays them. And that would be, of course, Kate is Sarah Chalke, who many people might know as Elliot Reed on Scrubs, which was a very popular series on network television right around the time that this TV series takes place, which is 2003. You also might know her from like her stint as the other Jackie on Roseanne. And, you know, she's been doing a bunch of stuff since then. And also, of course, we have as our other lead, Tully Hart, Katherine Heigl, who is a notorious, I think is fair to say, actress.
Yeah.
she starred on Grey's Anatomy for a number of years. I believe she had sex with a ghost. Eventually, she was written off the show because apparently people did not enjoy working with her. And, you know, you might also know her from Knocked Up and that show where she played like the Secretary of State or something. I forget. It was not long lasted. She's had a real up and down career, but Manish here is a big defender of hers. And that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring him on to talk about this show, because she is really the lead of this show. It's a two-hander for sure, but it really, like learning about the development of the series, she was cast before anyone else on the show, and it really feels like a starring vehicle for her and a bit of a return to to like the world of television that she got her start in the fact that this is kind of a very soapy sort of relationship drama, just like Grey's Anatomy was all those years ago. So I guess I wanted to get your thoughts first on like why you like, why you love, I should say, Katherine Heigl so much, and what you think about her and Sarah Chalk as lifelong besties on the show.
Yeah. So it's not that I love Katherine Heigl, but I think that she is such a fascinating figure in terms of her relationship to audiences and to network television executives, and because I think she's so weird, because like sometimes I feel like she's totally like I can never decide where I really fall on her, you know, whether I like really am defending her, supporting her, thinking that, you know, everyone else is, you know, falling into the trap of hating a, you know, a difficult woman, as they say. But then also I kind of go back to, and I'm like, yeah, but she also just kind of seems like a nightmare in a lot of ways. And so I'm like, you know what, because she is so, because she goes back and forth for me, I'm like, you know what, that I appreciate that in a star. You know, I like someone who is a little messy, a little shady, doesn't, you know, you can't really, you know, she's not really here to be, you know, America's sweetheart, although she tried to be, you know, and unfortunately she, and the other thing is like, she fell victim to the 2000s romantic comedy slump. And yes, a lot of people, you know, they blame her for it, but I don't think it's really her fault. I think it like happened while she was trying to become a movie star. And at that time, you know, that's how you become a movie star. If you were a pretty blonde, thin, tall woman, you did romantic comedies. But then it's just the material wasn't there for her. So it's like in some ways she, for me, is a victim of circumstance. In some ways she caused her own problems. So I'm like, I can't get a read on you. So I'm just going to like, you know, I think that's great. I think that's interesting. I think she's an interesting woman. You know, she executive produced Firefly Lane, which I find very interesting, and gave herself, I think, the more, like, I think gave herself a role that is more meta and more, I think, brave for her than, you know, that she had given herself the Kate role. I think that would have been easy for her. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think she and Sarah Chalk had really fun chemistry. I actually liked them together. And, you know, as the season went on, I found myself more and more charmed by the show, partially because I realized they weren't going for the, like, you know, best friends who secretly hate each other trope, which I thought that's where I thought the show was going. But they really do have a breakable bond from their teens to their 40s. like, you yeah. know what, that description is exactly what you get, and that's great. So I don't know. I think Katherine Heigl is a fascinating woman. I think she's, you know, when she did her role, Unforgettable with Rosario yes. Dawson. I mean, fabulous performance in that movie. I mean, like, she really goes for it and makes you hate her in a way that I found very, very interesting. So I think that, like, you know what, more power to her. But, you know, I think anyone who is this complicated, I think, deserves to be at least admired for not being, you know, nice all the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't have as much sophisticated feelings about her as an actress as you do, just because I just haven't had as much of a direct personal relationship with her. I wasn't a watcher of Grey's Anatomy. I, as you know, I'm not as big into rom-coms as you are, and so I certainly yeah. didn't see hers, although hers had this reputation for just being incredibly like toxic and hateful and mean-spirited in a way that kind of drove people away. Which is another reason why I didn't check them out. But yeah, so I don't really know her as an actress that much, but I do know her as a celebrity, and I do yeah. find her celebrity arc very interesting. And I think one of the best things about this show is that it really does lean into that and uses all of the stuff that we know about her and her reputation, and to its advantage with the character of Tully Hart, who in the 2003 quote-unquote modern day setting is a talk show host of the Girlfriend Hour, which is a daytime syndicated talk show similar to, like, somewhere between Ellen and Oprah, it seems, though I do have questions, a lot of questions about that. But yeah, so she's kind of doing, so she is this celebrity persona on the show as well. And she has, she's thorny and messy and makes mistakes and pushes people away and is a complicated, almost anti-hero in a lot of senses. Yeah. And I love that. I love it when women get to play that. And I think she is the is perfectly cast in the role. I mean, it's no surprise to me that she cast herself. But I do agree that that is somewhat brave because it's easy for you to for her to be in a situation where she can present herself in the world however she wants as the producer of the show, that she would try to cast herself in this way that would kind of help reboot her image or something like that. And I think it's really strong for her to present a role that lets her kind of show, like, warts and all, like, who she is and really tap into that as an actress. And I think it made me like her much more. And I think that anybody who follows along this journey with us, if you watch the show, I can't imagine you and walking out of it not having some warm feelings for her, even given her reputation. But I do think part of that is her performance, and part of that is how genuine her connection with Sarah Chalk seems. Sarah Chalk's an incredibly likable actress, I think. She certainly has that sort of, like, type A, high-strung, neurotic personality that can be somewhat grating for some people, but I love. And I think that she, there's a world in which this show is, as you said, like, two people who grew up together, but went on, like, radically different paths and secretly resent each other for the lives that they've had. And this show, like, honors the complication of having a relationship where, like, one person is a stay-at-home mom and the other person is a celebrity, like, you know, a B-level celebrity maybe, but, like, genuinely, like, a person who's on national television every day with her own talk show. It navigates those waters, but it also allows that to be, like, an interesting complication and not this sort of, like, oh, she has everything that I want and she has everything that I want and isn't it awful, you know? Yeah. And I thought, especially in the first episode, they really seemed to be setting that up hard. And I was also, like you, very pleasantly surprised that they didn't go in that direction. For people who haven't seen the show, it's not just a show that takes place in 2003 inexplicably. It's also a show that at various times jumps around seven different timelines in a sort of This Is Us style, jumping around through the history of these two characters. Yeah. There's three main timelines, which is when the girls, the first year that the girls are friends when they're 14 in the early 70s. Like vaguely like 80s era when they are working at their first job on a local news network in Seattle, and then the present day of 2003. But along the way, they check in on seven different timelines in total. And I'm really curious, Manish, how did that work for you? Were you glad that it was structured this way? Do you think that they pulled it off? It's certainly a lot to juggle.
You know, I think it got easier for me as the season went on, but there was like one point where I thought they were in modern times, but it turns out they, like, I guess I got confused. And then, like, there's a whole thing about a picture phone in, like, the last couple episodes. I was like, wait, this whole storyline was in 2003, not 2019 or whatever. It's interesting. I think they did a lot of really cool stuff with the transitions. You know, the transitions aren't so much like just thematic transitions between them. Like, it's not like every episode has a theme and you kind of check in on these different timelines within this theme and all the stories kind of tie together. I think This Is Us does that pretty well. But in this one, it was also like transitions from like imagery or like feelings. So like, you know, if there's a feeling of like abandonment in one scene, you'll get the next scene that also has abandonment, but it's not the same kind of story. So I thought it was interesting. A little hard to follow. I think Seven, I honestly don't even remember the Seven, so maybe I just missed like when it was a different, you know, timeline. I thought it was well handled, not as elegantly as, you know, This Is Us has done in the past, but I think it was definitely interesting, definitely something I was not expecting from this show, and they got more confident with it as the show went on, or maybe I just got used to it more, but it definitely, I think I liked seeing, I liked seeing these girls or these women in, you know, these different eras of their life and how much they were like still together, you know, like I especially loved when they're like just out of college, you know, and starting their careers. That was my favorite timeline, just because it was cool to see them in this phase together versus like, you know, we've seen like teen friendships, we've seen like middle-aged mom friendships, but like seeing like just out of school, figure out their careers and like seeing their ambitiousness and stuff like that, I thought that was really, really great. But yeah, I found it very curious and very interesting, and I appreciated the ambition of doing it this way, where it's so much jumping around versus a more like traditional, like flashback structure. I thought it was ambitious and makes this show stand out from like other shows like this.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with most of the points that you made. I don't think that it's you. I think that they really do figure out how to at least let the various storylines through the decades breathe a little bit more as the episodes went on. The very first episode especially just felt like incredibly sort of frantic, cutting between various timelines in a way where just like it was almost like whiplash. And I thought, you know, they made some cinematography choices to try to distinguish the visual style of the timelines that I think also faded a little bit as time went on. Like there was a really strong sort of like natural light quality to the 70s in the beginning, which felt very jarring and I don't think totally worked, and they definitely lessened that as time went on. I think that, you know, just for people who haven't watched the show, the three main timelines, as I said, are when they're 14, when they're in the 80s starting out their career, and in their present day. We do not, although it would have been great if we got a Pen 15 style Sarah Talk and Katherine Heigl as 14-year-olds in the flashback. But we don't get that. We do get younger actresses for that storyline. But for pretty much all the other storylines and eras, we do have Sarah Chalk and Katherine Heigl playing themselves as younger characters. And I was really surprised by how effective that was. Like, I was a little apprehensive of, certainly Katherine Heigl and Sarah Chalk look very, very attractive and they look very good for being in their 40s. But the idea of them playing like 22-year-olds in an 80s like storyline sort of made me cringe when I heard about it. I was like, oh god, are they really gonna do this and they're all gonna be with a bunch of other 20-year-olds and like this is gonna be kind of, how does that not feel silly? But honestly, like the makeup people did a great job and the actresses like really just, I really didn't bat an eye. I was just like, oh yeah, they're in their 20s and now they're in their 40s and like that doesn't, it just worked completely like right away. And I was really impressed by that. Was that ever an issue for you, like watching these people like travel through time and through various layers of makeup?
You know, like whenever shows do stuff like this and they have like 40-year-olds playing 20-year-olds, it never bothers me. Or when they have 20-year-olds playing 40-year-olds, I'm just kind of like, I'm very easy to suck into, you know, the world of that. So, like, because I'm, like, honestly, like, I'd rather see Sarah Chalke and Katherine Heigl do this versus, like, getting, you know, 20-year-old actors when, like, you know what I mean? Like, it makes more sense to me, it makes more sense to do the makeup and just kind of roll with it than to, like, recast for every 20 years. So I'm glad they did it this way, and it worked. I mean, it works for me. This kind of stuff always works for me. So I'm not a good judge of that, but because I just am very easy to please in this regard. But yeah, I thought they did really great jobs in that. Like I said, that's my favorite timeline of the show. So I thought they were doing really great and acting like they were 20 and stupid and ambitious and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were great. I thought it was great. And, like, I liked that the other, like, they also cast, you know, Ben Lawson, and he's also playing 20 years younger. So just it's easier to buy the more actors that are playing younger there are, just because everyone, like, looks the same maturity-wise.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that definitely worked. The only time that it really didn't work was some of the old age makeup that they put on their parents. Yeah.
Right.
Especially, you know, Tully, Katherine Heigl's character, her mom, who is, I think she's excellent on the show, especially in the earlier season, in the earlier timelines. But even in the modern one, I thought she's really great. She's played by an actress called Beau Garrett, who I had not really had a lot of experience with before, even though she had a very familiar quality to her, and I thought she was excellent. In the flashback storyline, she kind of plays this sort of, you know, hippie burnout, like, mom who's, like, always high and unconscious half the time, and she has kind of a crappy boyfriend who never does anything dangerous, but certainly feels like a malevolent presence whenever he arrives, and is just very inattentive, and certainly helps contribute to Tully's feelings of inadequacy and abandonment and things like that. And then she, you know, resurfaces in the modern day timeline at first in sort of a heel turn, and then later you understand that actually what happened is not exactly how it appeared, and she actually gets to become a supportive presence towards the end, which I thought was really nice. But unfortunately, that was a little bit, you know, detracted by the incredibly terrible old age makeup that they put her in. Yeah. Like, was that just me, or was that incredibly distracting?
No, she looked like a cartoon old lady.
It was really, like, it was really crazy. And, like, I respect the fact that they're like, no, she's kind of like a hippie person, so, like, of course she would keep, like, really long, flowy gray hair, and that's fine. But just, like, the old age makeup was just really rough, and, like, and then I looked it up, and I thought they were, like, making, like, a 28-year-old be someone who's supposed to be in her, like, 70s. And then when I realized more, like, what was going on in the timeline, basically she's just supposed to be playing someone who is, like, in her, like, 60s, and the actress is actually in her 40s. So I really don't understand why they needed to go that overboard with the makeup in the first place. But because certainly, like, she's so striking in those 70s episodes as this sort of just, like, serene, like, presence of chaos in a way. I really enjoyed the complexity there, and I liked the way that the show was able to kind of look at her through both Tully's eyes and through Kate's eyes. That's the modern day Sarah Chalke character, Kate Mularkey. I liked the way that they let her exist through both eyes, and then we come back around and see her as in the present day, and we get to hear her tell her own version of those events, like what the kids didn't know and weren't privy to.
Yeah.
And it just retextures everything that we had already seen in an interesting way. And it doesn't, what I liked about it was that it didn't let her off the hook at all. It really just was like, it just allowed her to be a complicated person in a way that I think that not everybody on this show gets to be. sometimes people are like, I'm really complicated, and that's, but they're not. And I thought that one of the better versions of shading the characters came with her. I'm curious what you think about all of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought, yeah, I mean, I really liked Cloud, and I think I appreciate that, you know, the series kind of hinges on, like, the halfway point of the series is this kind of big twist, and regarding her, and then the second half, like, as you say, like, recontextualizes her character, and I definitely do agree that the makeup a little cartoonish for her, but I like that she becomes sort of a, yeah, as you say, a supportive figure, and, you know, she's allowed to have this complexity, and she's, you know, someone who is, like, dealt this hand of being a mom when she didn't really know how to do it, and, you know, I think this series is so interesting in terms of its motherhood theme, because you have so many mothers on this show, right? Like, you know, Kate is a mother, Tully, you know, almost becomes one and is struggling with her feelings about motherhood, and, you know, both of them have their own moms who have such complicated lives, and you really get to see, like, what it's like to realize your mother as a human being. And I really appreciated that, because I thought that it was handled really delicately, where, you know, where, like, the children are upset, but then also, like, but the audience isn't like forced to, like, hate the mom for, like, being a little selfish or being a little complicated, because it's like you see them as these, like, flawed human beings who have, you know, their own wants and needs and desires and, you know, imperfections. I thought that was really well handled in this show.
Yeah, I really agree. I love what this show says about motherhood, because there's an aspect to this show that's very kind of light and sort of it has many components that feel a little bit underdeveloped, I think is a polite way of putting it. I don't think that this is, you know, the world's best version of what this show could have been. But I do really like a lot of the choices that it makes. And I think that that conversation about motherhood and about just, like, intergenerational relationships is really, really well done. And I think partially due to the format of bouncing through time so well, but also just because, you know, the actors that they get to convey the material just really, really embody these characters in a way that's very effective. And I also just think that that was, like, their central idea that they really wanted to drill home, and they maybe spent a little bit more time on it, or I don't know exactly why, but I think that really does come across the best out of any of the stuff that they try to do. There's other aspects to this show that are more kind of soapy and more kind of like, oh, twist driven, and I don't feel like that all works well. But what does is when they really drill into the emotions of those types of intergenerational relationships, like between mother and daughter through time, and the sort of sibling relationship that you get between Tully and Kate, and also between the two of them and Kate's brother, who is certainly a tragic figure in a way that if I tell you that this character is a closeted gay character as a teenager in the 70s, and you were like, I wonder what's going to happen to him over the next 30 years on this show, you're probably going to be able to guess every bullet point. But still, I thought that what was interesting about his character was his relationship with his, you know, his natural sister and his surrogate sister, in these two women. And I thought that was also really interestingly rendered. I think that when this show really tried, it could be excellent. And I'm really happy that I invested the time because of that. Some of the other things, like I said, weren't as excellent. And I'm going to draw our attention to a character named Johnny Ryan, who is kind of the third lead, if there is one, of the show.
Yeah.
He's played by Ben Lawson, who seems like a very nice Australian man. And he's sort of, you know, he's the station manager in the 80s. That's how our two friends meet him. He eventually becomes Kate's husband and the father of her teenage daughter. The story kind of opens up with her and him on the rocks. They're kind of on the verge of getting a divorce, maybe in settlement, already getting separated because he wants to kind of have a midlife crisis and become a field reporter in the new war in Iraq, which was the way to know that this was in 2003. There's not a lot to really give you a signifier for 2003, but that's really the one main piece where you're just like, oh, it's that. And then, as Benich said, there's a pivotal scene introducing camera phones to the masses. But so that's kind of his story between those two timelines. He's also Katherine Heigl's producer on her talk show, which he resents because, of course, it's not real news, and that's what he cares about, I guess. I don't know. How did he work for you? I think you could tell he didn't work for me that well.
I found him very frustrating because, I don't know, I felt like his whole, like, you know, I'm a serious reporter thing, like, was so, I thought they were setting it up for some kind of, like, revelation for him about, like, hey, you know, I don't know, I felt like they were setting up all this stuff with him of, like, you know, him having this, like, midlife crisis, but I felt like there wasn't really much of a payoff to the, like, thematic part of it, which, you know, and how, like, he's up and, like, abandoning his family, and, I don't know, it just, like, it didn't sit well with me, because I don't think there's ever really a conversation about, like, the fact that he is, like, he's overcompensating for the fact that he works on this talk show and, like, chasing, like, the most dangerous assignment. And, like, I don't, you know, and just, he was, like, really annoying throughout most of it, just because it was just, like,
yeah.
I agree. I think the show was, like, trying to make him seem like this, like, great guy, but then, like, also saying he's not a great guy, but in a way where I'm supposed to be like, no, he says he's not a great guy, but that's, he just is. He has a golden heart. He just doesn't know it. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, like, he's, like, stringing on Kate, sleeping with Tully randomly, and then, like, 20 years later, like, abandoning his family to go to Iraq right after 9/11. I mean, it's crazy. And also, the thing that really frustrated me is how much they drew out the romance between Kate and Johnny in the 80s, even though half the show is their divorce. And I'm like, why is it taking them so long to get together?
Yeah,
because, like, to me, the interesting thing isn't their, like, will they, won't they, the 80s. The interesting thing for me is, like, what happens after they get married, because, you know, for them to have this, like, long buildup of a relationship and then get divorced, that middle part, seeing what their marriage was like, really would be more interesting to me, and seeing him, like, you know, basically do anything to get away from his family. Like, I want to see that build up, you know, not the, like, will they, won't they for 10 episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean, and I completely agree. I feel like this is an issue where at a certain point, and maybe it was always intended, but while watching it, I really had this feeling towards the halfway point where it was like, oh, I thought that they were setting all of these things up to be paid off, and actually they're setting these up to be paid off in future seasons.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All of a sudden it just felt like things were really slowing down. Like, there's a real momentum to the first few episodes once you kind of get your bearings of all the different timelines, where you're just like, oh, this is how all this stuff happened. And then it just feels like someone kind of hits the brakes and you're just like, oh, okay, why are we moving in slow motion all of a sudden? And it's like, oh, because they want a second season, and if they're going to still have all of these crazy multi, like, decade plot lines running, they can't resolve all of them at the end of the first season, right?
Right.
They need to have things to flash back to. So that's why, like, in the, and we'll get into it a little bit later, probably, but, like, you know, the episode of, like, they kind of, they hint for the whole season, like, oh, like, you know, Tully's mom, she started telling people that she died when she was 15, but she didn't really die, so what happened? And, you know, I think you could kind of put two and two together that, like, she was taken away from her. Like, we didn't know exactly why or how, but that kind of seemed like where they were going. But then you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and then they don't really get to that until the finale, where you're like, oh, she gets taken away, but it's a cliffhanger because now she's separated from Kate, and it's like, how will they ever be reunited? But it's like, we know they were reunited, and I mean, there's a certain amount of interest in the how, but not when you present the how as the cliffhanger, you know? Like, it doesn't really, because the cliffhanger is building up to what will happen, but we know what will happen, so you can't treat it that way.
Yeah,
and that was the same issue I had with the will they, won't they of Kate and her future husband, Johnny Ryan, in the 80s, where it's just like, okay, they're building up to when they finally fall in love, and then it's like, but okay, now we're in, like, episode 8, and they still haven't, they're like, we don't like each other, we're just gonna be friends, and she's like, what are you guys doing? Like, I know you guys get together, why do we need to drag this out for the full season? And yeah, I think that's the answer. Like,
yeah, I think it's, you know, it's so, like, the way they structured this season, like, there were some, like, subplots where I'm like, why am I even watching this, like, in this episode of, you know, at this point in the season, like,
or, like, Johnny gets, like, a full episode to be like, but journalism is really important, we need to care about the integrity of journalism. I'm just like, what, when was that the point of this show? Like, what are you guys doing?
Right. And like, the whole romance between Kate and the other school dad, like, I feel like that starts and stops too, and it's like, there's so much, like, build up, but then fizzling out, but then build up again, then fizzling out. And, like, and a part of it, I think, feels because of the timeline jumping, is that, like, a story will get picked up, it'll, like, have the build up in one episode, and then, like, the payoff will be in the next episode, but then not only is it the next episode, but it's also been, like, 30 years that we've seen.
Yeah.
So it also feels like, it feels like these stories are actually very small, which I like. I like small stories, but they get stretched out because we're jumping between them so much, you know? And, I found it frustrating because a lot of the really good stuff that I liked, gets, you know, I have to, like, share that with stuff that I find really tedious, like, you know, what's his name? Mutt, you know, that random boyfriend.
Yeah, who's just a really nice guy.
Like, nice guy, but, like, I don't know. And, like, I also felt like they, he's a nice guy, but I felt like they really did him dirty because, like, he's not really as much a romantic rival as he should have been, honestly. Like, I wanted to see, like, Kate actually struggle with these feelings. But the whole time I'm thinking, like, she's faking it with him because, like, he's a placeholder.
Yeah.
But then they don't explore that either. They're like, I think they tried to do it both ways where, like, she generally does love him, want to be with him. But then, like, he's so obviously not a rival. So I'm like, if they made that love triangle more interesting, I would have been all over it. Cause I mean, like, you bring, like, I remember you tweeted about Broadcast News and I thought that was a great comparison. but I'm like, this isn't, like, they should have done a love triangle like Broadcast News, where it's like, you need, like, both guys to be a worthy figure for there to be any tension in this love triangle. But
especially if you're going to draw that plot line out for as long as they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I thought it was going to end like when they sleep together and it's bad sex. I thought it was going to end there, but then they're still together in the next episode at the wedding.
Yeah. And then they're all together for like the whole wedding, even though like they're not like, and that's I guess the point, but like we didn't really need him there at the wedding. Like they could have just had, like they could have had the whole, they could have done the wedding entirely without him. And all you would be missing is the one scene where he notices them fighting and then he talks to her afterwards and is like, I guess we're breaking up. And she's just like, oh man, I didn't mean to. And he's like, well, it was great knowing you. And he walks out at the wedding. You're just like, what? Like, this isn't how humans behave.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a bit of a letdown. And I also just, I don't know. I feel like there's some aspects of this show that just really left me puzzled. Like, for instance, they do this thing where halfway through the series, we get flung into a flash forward where it's 2 years after the events of 2003. And it says like, and they keep making these ominous references to the fact that Kate and Tully are no longer speaking, at least, and maybe Tully has died. They appear to be going to, Kate and her daughter appear to be going to a funeral. Whose funeral is it? We don't know. And it's kind of like an open question for the whole season of like, whose funeral are they attending? Is it Tully's? Eventually it becomes clear that it's not Tully's, but we then know, well, someone else is dead, and also Kate and Tully aren't talking, and what is that? What is that going to be? And I spent the whole back half of the season being like, when are they going to build to this? Like, I hope they put in the time to justify this. Otherwise, it's going to feel really cheap. And then when I got to the final episode and they still had, and like at the start of that episode, they still hadn't even started to build to some sort of fracture. I was like, oh, this is going to feel really lame when we find out like why they stopped becoming friends. And then we get to the whole end of that episode and we don't find out why they weren't friends. Like the episode ends with like them hugging on like a chair together, being like, we're gonna be best friends forever and nothing can break it. And we've watched a full season where it's like, yeah, no matter what these two do, like they're so close that they're willing to forgive each other because that they're like sisters. So then you can't then be like, I don't ever want to talk to you again in this like 2 years later flashback. Like, what? That really annoyed me. If anything in this whole show annoyed me, it was that just felt incredibly cheap and just like this opportunity to build like intrigue and tension that wasn't really ever justified and was really paid off.
I wonder how the book ends, because this felt like writers like leaving themselves like breadcrumbs for season two, but they haven't figured out what Tully does, you know?
Yes.
And they're gonna spend this hiatus figuring it out, right? For a year, and then, you know, and then season two we'll get that mystery solved. But you're absolutely, I mean, like, it was so cheap, but like it was so it just felt so like nakedly like cliffhangery, where, you know, they want us to be like gossiping for this hiatus of like, what did Tully do?
Right. But they don't even build in any potential off ramps that it could be.
Because all of the tension that Kate and Tully have are resolved, right?
Exactly.
Like maybe I thought like, you know, when Tully and Johnny sleep together and Kate hears it, I was like, great, this is going to be good drama, because, you know.
Because for people who haven't watched, that happened in the 80s prior to, like, Kate and Johnny getting together. But when Tully knew that Kate was, like, in love with Johnny, but, like, you know, she probably shouldn't have done it, but Kate said she was over him, so anyway, that's the circumstances of them hooking up. And then eventually we know that, you know, Kate and Johnny become married and then are on the verge of getting divorced. And obviously Johnny still has a very close relationship with Tully because he's her producer at the job. So yeah, it totally seems like they're building to like, oh, maybe they, like, Tully and Johnny sleep together in the present day. And that is this like ultimate betrayal. And
well, not only that, but like, I was thinking maybe Kate never tells them that like she heard it, and so like they think they're keeping this like dark secret for 30 years or whatever. And but then that gets resolved in like the next scene.
Yeah, you immediately.
Know? And then I think, oh, maybe there's something to do with the brother, because like, you know, he comes out to Tully first, like 15 years before he comes out to anyone else, or 30 years even, maybe.
30 years, yeah.
And like, I was like, maybe Kate's mad that like she kept that secret, you know, from her.
I had that same idea. But then that gets resolved. I was like, oh, maybe like he never comes out of the closet, and then he like kills himself, and then that's the funeral that they're going to, and then it comes out that Tully knew, and Kate, and like, no, that's not it. Like,
so all of their conflict gets resolved, which is great in some ways, because like, again, I didn't want this to be a show about two women who hate each other but are friends, because like, I hate that trope. Yes. But then at the same time, like, it diffuses the drama so much that when they want to do this cliffhanger of they're no longer speaking, there's no breadcrumbs for it, no hints to it. So it means that, you know, let's forget the books, right? Because who even knows they're going to follow the books, right? And I haven't read the book. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, but like, we'll get to that. I did a little bit of research, okay. And we can get to that at the end.
Okay. Because as someone who has not read the book, I'm thinking, like, they don't know what Tully did, so they're going to leave this cliffhanger for us, and they'll figure it out, and then we'll see what happens, which I think is, like, you know, it's just not good writing, you know? And no.
It's not just bad because they've resolved all of the potential conflicts that it could be. It's that in resolving all of those conflicts, like setting up those potential conflicts and then resolving them so thoroughly, it makes these two in their relationship seem completely unflappable, right?
Yeah.
So then it's like you're building to something that has to be so massive. Like the fact that like she's not even a little bit mad at Tully for like not telling her that her brother was gay for 30 years. And, you know, I think that Tully probably made the right decision in that situation. And I think that Kate probably in time would think that that was the right thing to do. But it would make sense for a person to find out that in the moment and be upset for a little while. And like, no, she's just like, I get it. And you're like, what? Like, they don't. And yeah, it just like they tease like early on that like Tully and Johnny might get together, and then they're just like, no, they're just like brother and sister, basically, like they would never hook up again. And it just it creates this whole situation where it's just like, oh, nothing could get in between these two. And at that point, that could be an interesting way to set up stakes, right? Because then it's like, but you're writing yourself into a corner where it's going to be really hard to pay that off.
Yeah, right.
And you just, I just think that it's, like you said, it really just feels like they were like, well, we're going to tease it all season, and then, you know, we'll have the summer to figure out what it is.
Yeah, yeah. The other conflict that gets resolved is this, the article that Kate's boss writes, this, like, hit piece that she writes. I guess this is, so what timeline was this in? Was this 2003 as well?
This was 2003, yes. Right. Because Kate has now that she's getting divorced from her husband, who is apparently a wildly successful daytime like talk show host, producer, person. And they live in an insane mansion with like a beautiful like backyard overlooking.
Oh my god, that pool is ridiculous.
Yeah. So because they're getting divorced, she needs to get a job. Like, okay, whatever. Like, that definitely isn't true. But so she gets a job as this assistant for this editor of a magazine of some kind. And the editor is like this, you know, like 28-year-old who's just like a train wreck and just like straight out of like Paris Hilton's 2003, you know. And I really actually liked the actress a lot. I thought that like she played all of the notes that they were asking her to do just like perfectly. As like down to the fact that she is actually a very cunning investigative journalist when all is said and done, you know, like I loved that reveal. Yeah. So Kate's working at that magazine, and she partially gets the job because she name drops Tully, and of course that ends up resulting in what Kate thinks is going to be sort of a puff piece cover story that her boss does on Tully, but ends up being this like crazy mean hit piece with all of these you know, anonymous sources and an interview with her mom, and like exposing the fact that her mom, who she has publicly told the world is dead, is actually like living in like a van somewhere as like a waitress, like with no money, and it really makes her look bad, and you think, oh, this is going to be the thing that like drives a wedge between them, and then as you were saying, Manish, it doesn't, like, not even a little bit, like, not for a second does Kate blame her at all, which is like nice. I mean, they're really close friends, and I appreciate the fact that we're seeing a relationship where like they trust each other enough to not blame each other for these sorts of things, but
yeah, if I mean, you're
if you're not going to mind that for tension, then why do it in the first place?
I mean, they have an unbreakable bond from their teens to their 40s, so...
that's it, fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, the thing, and like, the other little nugget of conflict that doesn't really get touched upon is, like, you know, when the article comes out and Kate is talking about it with her brother, and he's like, yeah, she's not mad at you. And it kind of gets revealed that they have this whole separate friendship outside of Kate, which I thought was fascinating. Yeah. And but again, there's no payoff of that. There's no even hint that it's something that's going to be nagging at Kate. And it's like kind of nagging at me of like all these like ways where they're exactly what you're saying. You're so right. They're writing themselves into a corner and putting this, putting a lot of pressure on their creativity for season two.
Yeah.
And because let me tell you, I really doubt that whatever they come up with is not going to be as like elegant as if they had followed through with these little conflicts and, you know, made it like burst in some way, you know, and within those 2 years. And like, I don't know, maybe it'll be that like Tully convinced Johnny to go to Iraq or whatever, something like that. Like, I don't know.
Although we see her try to talk him out of it multiple times. Yeah, so it feels like that can't be it.
That can't be it, right? Right, of course.
Not to interrupt, but that actually is one of my favorite like little moments of the whole show is when he like, so, you know, Johnny is talking to Tully and trying to justify the fact that like he needs to do this incredibly reckless thing. And she's just like, she just can't understand why he's being so stupid and basically says as much. And he's just like, don't you remember when that time that you fell through the table and you told me that, you know, people like us, we can't live normal lives. And she's just like, I can't believe that you have carried this like terrible piece of advice that a coked up 22-year-old who had no idea what was going on said to you. And yeah, I was like,
that was really great.
I was almost mad that they showed us that scene eventually, because it was like, it works perfectly just in that little moment. Like, I don't need to eventually see the flashback of her having that conversation with him, because it's just like, I love that he carried that with him and that it impacted him so much. And I love that that was just an incredibly meaningless thing that happened while she was just trying to like justify her own bullshit in the moment when she was like really not in a good place. That just, I just love that as like an idea.
I think that was really great writing, you know, when they had that conversation, and I think that it was bad writing to then show that scene later.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, I agree,
because like, you know, there's a lot of value, I think, to building these relationships off screen and having these moments that aren't on screen. And just being like, you know, remember we had this conversation, because it like fills out this, their lives more. And if we have to see every little thing that they do, then it just then it just feels like a, you know, two-dimensional thing of like, we're just seeing what we're, you know, we're seeing every important thing, but like, you know, it's nice that they have history. And I really do like the relationship between Tully and Johnny, because like, aside from their like fling, it doesn't really have any like, there's no like there's no like resentment. It's not like Tully secretly loves him or he's secretly in love with Tully, or they kind of have this like really interesting relationship, like a sister and a brother-in-law, I guess. And what's really cool is like the episode where they're showing Kate's labor. Like, I like that they point out, you know, that Tully is inserting herself into this marriage where she doesn't really belong, but also like she kind of does belong there because Kate wants her there. So
right,
it's I think the dynamic of the three of them is so fascinating because like it's very unconventional, you know.
Yeah,
to have this like threesome where it's like really, not sexual.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I really loved the part of that episode where they really drive home the idea of like, it's the, like you said, that it's, you know, it's the three of them, but maybe it shouldn't be, but maybe it should be. But then they resolve that by with Tully being like, okay, I'm going to take the job in New York. And it's like, all right. And then I guess she like works there for a while and then comes back and like nothing changes. Like, it was like another example of them setting something up for no reason. And I feel like they undercut a lot of the really good things about the show by doing that. Like another episode that I really liked, or at least storyline that I really liked, was in the episode where we see them in college, where we get a real picture of like what their life was like just prior to their time in the local. You know, and the whole episode is building to this thing of like, you know, here are these people who decided to kind of hitch their wagons to each other because they were their own, like they were their person and they were like inseparable. And we've seen through their younger years why that was the case and how meaningful that was. And so of course they would want to build their lives in such an intertwined way. But we know by modern time that like they are still quite close friends, but they have very different lives. And so how do we get that? Where is that fissure going to come? And they kind of build to it in the episode in college where we find out that, you know, Tully is starting to prioritize her career a little bit more than her friendship with Kate in a very reasonable and respectful and not melodramatic way, which I appreciated. And meanwhile, Kate is, you know, thinking about going abroad to get some time away from Tully so she can figure out who she is as a person.
Yeah.
And it builds to this like really like honest and interesting argument between the two of them, and then it is immediately resolved by a quick cut to present day Kate's living room where we see, oh, she did go to England and I guess it was fine. It's like, what? You can't just do that. That's insane. Like,
yeah, again, and then you never return to it. A timeline where they're apart. Maybe that'll come in season two.
I'm sure. Again, it feels like they're like setting that up for future stories, but you built it up in that moment. You can't then just deflate the entire thing, because you really feel like, wow, I don't know how Tully would cope with that. That seems really interesting to know that that happened. Like, what would that be like? And what would Kate's life be doing this incredibly bold thing? And it's just like quick cut to a picture of her on like, you know, next to Big Ben or whatever, smiling. Like, you're just like, okay, I guess it worked out. Just like, what?
I think like it's so fascinating like how much this show wants to be like both tension free and also have all this like soap opera stuff. Like, like I was thinking about the Kate's home life with her parents and her mom's affair and like the tension with her brother. And I'm enjoying the fact that it's like Kate's like seeing the glimpse of her family as like this imperfect thing. And like, you know, she's kind of the golden child, I guess, in this family.
Mm-hmm.
And like I love this scene where she's trying to talk to her dad about something and he's just like asking for more beer, and you kind of get a sense of like, oh yeah, this is why her mom is having an affair, because the husband's like emotionally detached, but then he's not,
right?
So it adds some shade there. And You, I think also seeing more of like why her brother had to like stay in the closet for in his entire life. Yeah, it's, I think her home life is very fascinating. I would love to see more because I think it's, I like the idea of like Kate's illusion of this like perfect family getting shattered and realizing that all these people have all these secrets that she doesn't really know about. And all this stuff is happening behind the scenes that she doesn't even know, even though she's like a part of the family. And she's just like in her own world in some ways.
Yeah. And I think for a show that's structured in this way, where you're kind of bouncing back and forth through time, I think you could really tell a very interesting story about that. Because I think that, you know, a lot of people have an experience where they see certain things as they're growing up that don't quite make sense in their family. And so they just kind of push it into the back corner of their mind and just choose never to think about it. And then like 30 years later, like it finally pays off in a way where you're just like, oh, that's what that was about. And like, it was all building to this in the background this whole time. And I knew, but I didn't know, you know, like I think that you could tell a story like that with this structure, like really well. They don't really do that though with this like they almost do, but then, you know, they don't, so it would be interesting. I kind of, the last thing that I wanted to talk about with the show before we kind of head into like what we think about like moving forward with it is just that, is to just kind of piggyback on what you were just saying, I really feel like this show is just significantly in tension between these two rival ideas of like what it is. And in the first category, we have this fun soap opera where, you know, like our lead actresses are hooking up with cute, sexy boys who are like 15 years younger than them and like having romantic speeches and like swapping partners and all this stuff. And then on the other hand, and like, you know, an evil villain from the past, a long lost family member, and like all that kind of stuff happening. And then on the other hand, you have this sort of like this, what I think is more of a film genre and certainly a novel genre as well, of this sort of like life and love with my best friend, you know, where kind of like, you know, Beaches, or a more recent example would be like In Her Shoes, you know, where it's just like you're traveling with these two women who have these like this unbreakable bond and they are like experiencing life and maybe one dies at the end. Like that's kind of the sort of story, and those two stories don't really go together that well. And I'm just curious, like, if you think that that is sort of what the issue is with this show as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think like it wants to have its cake and eat it too, because I find the show, like, it was so strange in the episode where Telly has her miscarriage. Like, two scenes later, Kate is doing karaoke with, like, that hot PTA guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, her best friend just had a miscarriage. Like, shouldn't she be, like, I know technically, like, okay, fine, like, we're supposed to buy that, like, Telly is, like, kind of over it, I guess, because she did that, like, I mean, that you know, thing with her audience where she's, like, interviewing the other women who had miscarriages. So I guess that was her, like, catharsis. But I'm like, still, like...
Yeah, but then the show also spends a lot of time being like, but actually, she's still not okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Right.
But, like, I'm just... And so, and it wants to be, like, this, like, Gen X nostalgia thing of, like, you know, like, women... I don't know, like... It wants to be like kind of like that ABC soap kind of thing where it's like a lot of drinking and having sex and, you know, needle drops and stuff.
Like at one point, like Kate opens the door to naked to like impress her new boyfriend, but oh no, the mom's there. Like how?
That's so strange. Like no guy would ever do that. Like
yeah, like he was. Like, I was my supposed mom to come to your house. Her. Yeah, I was supposed to come to your house, but I had to go shopping with my mom, so I figured I'd bring her along just to let you know that I couldn't come over. Like, that literally makes no sense.
Yeah, and I think that was in the finale, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
I was
so.
Like, this is happening in the last episode of the season, when, like, they could be setting up this conflict that's going to tear them apart. Like, I'm like, you're wasting time here, guys. But, no, I think, like, yeah, like, it wants to be that, like, kind of, like, cutesy, you know, primetime soap thing. But then it takes on these, like, really heavy stuff. And it, like, you're right, like, it takes on this more, like, filmic approach to this, like, to, like, building this tapestry of this friendship. And I'm, like, to me, that's more compelling than the wannabe Grays, wannabe Scandal type show. Or, like, the wannabe, like, brothers and sisters, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to reconcile that. Because, like, I think the, like... I mean, I think the, like, cutesy primetime soap part is much less compelling, right? It's so cheesy.
Try-hard,
you know?
There's definitely a place for that. And I think if it was well done, like, I don't think that it would necessarily feel that way. But it really isn't. It feels very, like, warmed over. Like, it's set in 2003, and it feels like we saw this stuff in 2003, you know?
Yeah.
So then it's, like, and like you said, there's this really interesting, like, textured, like, emotional, like, center to it that they just choose to, like, dip in and out of. And it's, like, just make that show, you know? Like, why not? Like, who are you trying? It's, I heard one critic say that they felt like there are just portions of this series that feel like it's for, like, the wine mom crowd to be like, yeah, ooh, like, I can't believe they said penis, you know? And it's just like, and there is, and it's just like, that's at odds with, like, everything that's interesting about the show, to me, at least.
Yeah. The cursing felt so weird to me for that reason. Like, exactly, wine mom, totally. And, like, there's, like, no nudity in the show. I'm like, you have, like, a million hunk guys running around. You can't show, like, a butt.
No butts. Zero,
like,
butts.
Really, like, you're going to do this, like, tasteful, like, blanket.
They did a full sex montage, and everyone was clothed the entire time. Like, how do you do that? Like, literally, like, daytime TV shows more skin than this show does.
But, like, that's what frustrates me, is that, like, it's so, like, you know, I do like that it's set in 2003, just because, like, I'm kind of ready for, like, that, like, 2000s nostalgia boom that's going to start now, because, like, it was a weird time. And, like, having just watched the, like, Sopranos again, which is all about that sort of, like, post 9/11 malaise of in America, like, I think this show, like, taps into that, because, like, in the 2003 timeline, everyone just seems so, like, downbeaten in a lot of ways, or, like, trying really hard to, like, recapture something. So I'm like, yeah, like, it's great. Like, I like the 2003 part of it, because I think it also adds something new, because, like, we've seen 80s nostalgia, we've seen 70s nostalgia. Like, I want to see, like, I think the 2003 is so interesting as a time period. But I also feel like it's going to get, I mean, that's so smart what you said, that it feels like we saw this show in 2003. Like, I'm pretty sure that's when Brothers and Sisters came on, in 2003.
Grey's Anatomy, right.
Like, yeah, we're joking off mic that, like, Kate probably watches Grey's Anatomy and American Idol and, you know, all those, like, 2000 shows.
Oh, yeah. She absolutely, like, tries to get her daughter to watch American Idol with her. And, like, her daughter did it once. And then she's like, that's our thing. And then, like, their daughter doesn't want any part of it after
Can I say something really stupid?
Sure.
With Kate's name being Kate and Mara's name being Mara, I kept thinking of Kate Mara, the actress. Like, it really distracted me.
Who was also playing a 40-year-old, like, in a period piece on a teacher on over on FX. Right. So, but yeah, that's funny.
It really took me out.
Can I say a stupid thing? Mara has a friend at, like, literally for, like, 1.5 scenes, who's, like, this kind of, like American Idiot era, like, Green Day fan, sort of, like suburban goth kid. And he, like, makes a, like, his, like, one of his three, like, lines of dialogue is defending the war in Iraq. And I was like, what? Even in the suburbs, like, what kind of, this kid would not be saying those, that line. Just give it to the other kid in the room. Like, what are you guys doing?
Like, it's really funny.
I don't know, maybe maybe that was supposed to, maybe it was like intentional and it was supposed to be a joke, but I don't know. It just really stuck out to me. It's like
I totally forgot about that. That was really funny.
I like literally did like a double take. I was like, wait, what? He said that?
Yeah. We hardly talked about Mara, but I couldn't stand her. I was like, give your mom a break.
I mean, the show, we didn't talk about it that much because the show doesn't really care about her as a character, I don't think.
Well, she kind of like goes back and forth where she's like, acts out against her mom, and then someone's like, give your mom a break. This, you know, the divorce isn't just her fault. And then she like just doesn't listen to that.
Yeah, it seems like she's gonna listen, and then like she goes away for a while, and then the next time the plot needs her to be like rebellious teenage daughter, she just is again. It's very plot driven sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, although like the scene where she like has to put her dog down and is like, "You'll always be my best friend," that was like a nice moment, and that definitely made me cry. But I mean, you know, that probably says more about me than anything.
I totally forgot about that. So.
Yeah, there's a whole like storyline where they have to put their dog down, which is just like, you're just trying to get people to cry. That's all you're doing.
Well, not only that, but I also was like, she blames her mom for that too, even though it was the dad's decision.
Yes, like, yes. And also, I kind of resented it because, like, so they don't really show her getting the dog, like, as a, like, in the flashback sequences until, like, right around that time, like, until, like, that episode, I believe.
But
you also never see any evidence of them owning a dog for the first, like, 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah, right.
And then all of a sudden they have, like, a sick old dog who's on death's door, and you're just like, wait. And then you find out, like, oh, they got her when Mara was born. And it's just like, yeah, but these are not dog owners. Like, I've never seen them with their dog. Like, you can't do that.
They're never at home.
No. But, yeah, I guess maybe it's just, like, such a giant house that the dog is just in the other wing the whole time.
I feel like they probably have, like, a live-in dog walker, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, well, maybe they had to cut back when the divorce was coming and she had to go to work. I was just like, okay. I just couldn't believe they introduced that as, because if for those of you who haven't watched the show, like basically in the very first episode, we like meet Kate like with her daughter in the principal's office getting in trouble, and the principal's like, well, what's going on? Why are you so out of character? And Kate and the daughter is like, because my parents are getting a divorce and my mom is late for a job interview. And you're just like, oh, okay. And then you go to their house and it's just like the most expensive house, the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And you're just like, there's like, she doesn't need a job now. Like, what? And also, like, she's on very good terms with her ex, even though they're getting divorced. So I don't know. It just was like, whatever. There's certainly, they could have come up with another reason why she rejoins the workforce. But
yeah.
I guess it doesn't really matter.
Even just her being like, I'm bored because my daughter doesn't need me anymore. That's more interesting.
That would have been, I think that would have, and I think you would have bought it and it would have made sense. And yeah, so, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I want to ask you, like, what you think about watching a season 2 if you're looking forward to it. But before we get there, I wanted to let you know that I did do a little digging into this book series to see, because once we saw, like, oh, they're building up to a cliffhanger, there's going to be a season 2. What's, like, there's a second book. I was, like, I was interested, like, oh, I wonder if the book ended on a similar cliffhanger. I wonder if, like, we know anything about the second season based on the second book. And what I learned was that the book ends very differently from the first season of the show. It does end with a very big it doesn't end with a very big betrayal. It features a very big betrayal in like the last sort of act of the book, if you will, where Kate comes onto Tully's show, and this is why we know it's like most likely not going to happen, so I don't feel bad spoiling it. And if it does happen, it's like I'd be very upset because it's a really dumb idea.
I'm so excited.
but so Tully invites Kate onto the girlfriend hour under like false pretenses, and then finds out that like Mara is there too, and actually it was supposed to be the two, like Mara and Kate, going on there to reconcile publicly on national television, which is like, okay. But then it turns out that the segment that Tully had decided to do, like the take on the segment, was that it was on overbearing parents. and that, which, like, Kate felt betrayed by and so insulted and embarrassed. And in this universe, the husband is still the executive producer on the show as well, and was not informed that this was what the angle would be. And so he quits, and Kate vows never to speak to her again. But don't worry, because they eventually do reconcile after Kate gets diagnosed with breast cancer and is on her deathbed. And that's how the book ends, with Kate dying and them reconciling.
And that's book one?
That's book one, yes. Book two is all about, like, Tully and Johnny and Maura dealing with the fallout of Kate's death. Also, at some point, Tully gets into a traumatic accident and goes into a coma, where she gets to reunite with Kate on, like, the spiritual plane, I guess. I don't know.
Well, but love that, because that would bring Katherine Heigl back to her ghostly relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe that's what drove her to the material in the first place.
She's so excited about that.
So maybe they'll go in that direction. I feel pretty confident that they won't, which is why I brought it up.
That seem like something show Tully would do.
No, it absolutely doesn't.
It also doesn't seem like, so even if that does happen, it seems like that would be resolved in the episode, like every other conflict in the show.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't seem any, it really doesn't seem any worse.
Because you can just imagine, like, Tully being like, look, I have to do it for the ratings, you know, like, I was going to get fired, or, like, they have the new producer or the new owner or whatever
in the show.
You could see her being like, my hands are tied. And then, like, yeah, interesting. No, that sounds so dumb. That's also so 2003. Like, that's so, like, Jerry Springer. Like,
it's pretty, I was really surprised. I was like, oh, wow, maybe I'm not giving this book enough, this show enough credit for kind of making the book more interesting, if that's where the book went. But so we'll see. Assuming that doesn't happen, but maybe Katherine Heigl does get to have a chance encounter with a ghost. Who knows? Are you going to watch season two?
I think so. I guess, I don't know. We'll see. Like, I want to see it now, because I want to see what the writers come up with for this, like, big conflict.
Although, you know that you're not going to find out anytime soon. You're going to have to get through, like, 7 or 8 episodes before you find out what broke them up.
Right. But, you know, like, I think I think a lot of the things that I would have found interesting might come into season two, like seeing the seams of the marriage between Kate and Johnny fall apart. Like, I want to see those. I want to see that. And I want to see, like, the fallout from Tully and her ex-husband. You know, I don't think that story is over. And just also, like, seeing them in college, I guess, and, like, that, you know, that semester abroad. So, like, I want to see season two, but also I'm feeling like this could be the kind of show where by the time season two comes around, I don't really care.
Yeah. I can see that. I feel like if it came out at around the same time that this came out, I feel like I would be much more likely to watch it. You know, I think if it comes out during a period of time where there's not much else out there, which sounds insulting, but that really isn't, because there's so much content out there at all times that, like, at a quiet period, you often have the choice between watching something new or catching up with something old or something that you missed. So it still is competitive, but just not as competitive as, like, a million new things are coming out, like, every weekend. So I think in a situation like that, I think I'm probably would watch a second season, just because, like we're saying, there's so many different versions of this show that is on display over these 10 episodes. And I feel like in a second season, they would really have to decide more concretely, like, which show are we? And I would be very interested to find out what show they think they are. I feel like that is often a sort of thing that happens with second seasons of TV shows, where it's just like, oh, that was really cool. a lot of people liked it for different reasons, and now, like, the creators are taking in all of that feedback and deciding, like, this is the audience that we're going to kind of, like, this is what we hoped the audience would see, this corner of the audience appreciated it, let's double down on it. And sometimes that's great, and sometimes you're just like, oh no, that's not, I guess that we were thinking that this was two different things, good to know.
right, like, I can see a version of this where they choose to be the, like, wine mom primetime soap.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be a mistake on their part, but I don't know. I like I said earlier, like, I was charmed by the show as it went on, and like, I think the, like, middle section, like, episodes, like, maybe like 4 to 8, I thought really strong, and even the last two I thought were, like, good, you know. Like, I think this is the kind of show that, for me, lives and dies on its central performances, and because Sarah Chalk and Katherine Heigl are really great together and really funny, and you know, seeing Sarah Chalk in a show like this, you know, I'm so used to seeing her on, like, you know, How I Met Your Mother or Scrubs, where it's like pure sitcom stuff. Seeing her, like, do, like, dramatic stuff, like, is Roseanne, of course. I mean, seeing her do, like, dramatic stuff is really fun, and I think they're so good together that, you know, the two of them would be what draws me back, you know, in a year when season 2 comes out.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think that they have that special thing where they are great together, and they're great when they're, like, handling the, like, whatever half of the show is featuring them in the moment, like, when they're asked to, like, be the leads of the show. Right. And I feel like sometimes, and I feel like that can be very difficult to pull off sometimes, because a lot of times you'll get, you know, people who are really good, like, characters that are really good and interesting when they are paired, but because they're the two strongest characters, the writers feel the need to separate them more than, so that way they can carry their own portions of the show. And then you're like, but the most interesting thing about the show is the two of them together. Why do we need to watch them, like, spinning off into different, like, sections of the show, you know? I think that this show strikes a good balance, and I think that these actresses are both strong enough performers to be interesting by themselves and together.
Do you think we'll see more of the 70s and those two teen actresses? We didn't really talk about them, but I thought they were fantastic as well.
I really liked them. I thought they were both very good. I appreciated the choices that each of them made. I feel like the young Tully really didn't try to be like Katherine Heigl at all, and I think that worked perfectly fine for that character, because she is such a character who has transformed into something else as an adult, so that worked.
And
I thought the little actress who played young Sarah Chalk actually, like, picked up a lot of her mannerisms and did, like, a really good job of being a believable version of Sarah Chalk, and I also appreciated that, because I felt like that character is a person who is always been that way, you know? So I liked the two of them together. I thought they did a really good job playing the comedy and the drama and the teen angst and all of that. And I thought they portrayed the young versions of these adult stars that we know so well, very admirably. And I definitely think we're going to go back to that, because they left us off on a cliffhanger of the two of them being separated and how are they going to, you know, and clearly Tully eventually became, like, a part of Kate's family, but did she, like, literally become a part of her family? That's sort of very open to interpretation in season 1. So, and that is the sort of cliffhanger that we're up against. So I think we're definitely gonna go back there with those two and find out, like, how they were reunited after being so traumatically separated. And I thought that was all really well done and really well handled. Like, I really felt for them in that moment when the cops are taking them away and everything else, and she's racing after the car. Like, it could have felt so hacky and over the top, and it was, they played the emotions, like, really sincerely, and it really worked.
Yeah.
Do you think that Johnny is dead?
Well, I don't know. They're not getting rid of Beth Lawson because, you know, he'll appear in other timelines, right?
Right.
I don't know. I don't really want to see that, you know. I want to see him come back.
I don't know. I have the exact opposite reaction, which is, I think he's definitely not dead, and I kind of wish he was. just because, I don't know. His, like you said, so long ago in the beginning of this episode. they want him to be like this, like he's a crappy guy but secretly a nice guy, and I just don't like, I don't know, like he needs to be maybe more charismatic or just like be less slimy of a performer for me to actually believe that. Like I just don't like, he just sucks, and I don't want to keep having to, and like the show kept flirting with making him be a third lead, and I'm just like, no, like this is not the Johnny Ryan show. That's not what we're doing. It's not a show about three people with an unbreakable bond. It's a show about two people with an unbreakable bond.
Yeah, he's not a Firefly Lane girl as much as he wants to be.
So
yeah,
all right, we're gonna have to leave it there. Is there any like final thoughts that you wanted to say? I really thought that Max, the love interest for Katherine Heigl, was super cute, and she was so shitty to him, and it just like really made me. He just like we'd constantly look at her like a sad puppy, being like, but I love you, and I that worked for me every time. do you have any final thoughts on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, I was thinking about if I would recommend this show, and I think if you haven't watched it, but you're listening to this, and you kind of know what to expect with it. So, like, if you go into it knowing what it's going to be like and what its strengths are and what its weaknesses are, I think it's pretty enjoyable. And, like, I watched it over, like, 5 days, I think, 4 or 5 days. So it was, like, nice to have it for, like, that 2 hours that I watched it a day, and then... you know, not have to like watch it all the way through it, and like one, like to me it's not a good binge show, it's a good like space out show, because like it can get kind of grating after a while.
Yeah, that is, I was kind of like sick in bed the day that I watched this, and I just watched the whole thing straight through, all 10 hours of it, and it definitely, like, the timelines especially started to get a little floaty, where I'm just, there was a point where I was just like, wait, that's in this episode? I thought that was last episode. We're still in that story? Like, so that was definitely an issue. So I would agree. I don't think it's the best binge show. I think it's a nice kind of comfort watch, though. So
yeah.
I think that if you're looking for that, it's a good idea. And if you like these two actresses, there's enough there that you're gonna enjoy it. And if you only like one of these actresses, I think that the great chemistry that the two of them have together will like make you eventually like be won over by the other one at the end.
Absolutely, 100% correct.
Yeah. So all right, well, thank you for coming on and talking to me about Firefly Lane. I feel like this makes us honorary Firefly Lane girls, but I guess we might have to go into a coma and check in with Kate to make sure. In the meantime, where can we find more of your stuff on the internet, Manish?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at themanish89. That's themanish89. Also, my two podcasts, It Pod to Be You, which you can find at It Pod to Be You, and the podcast I co-host with Dave Giannini, Queer Now, which is at Queer Now Pod. And I think you can find those pretty much on the major podcasting apps.
Awesome. I am a regular listener of both of those shows, and I really enjoy them. So I definitely recommend checking them out. Yeah. And they're also, what's nice about Queer Now is that you guys cover like a lot of ground on like classic cinema, and you do it in a pretty reasonable amount of time. Like episodes are oftentimes way under an hour, which is nice way to kind of like fit that into your day sometimes, especially in like, you know, this world where we're not quite traveling and needing podcasts as often as we used to. It's nice to have a little bit.
Yeah, no, we try to keep them short because like sometimes there just isn't that much to say, to be honest.
As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Media Thinkings, on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow my movie podcast, Cinema Joes, at Cinema Joes on Twitter, Cinema Joes on all major podcast platforms. This week, we are going to be releasing an episode on Before Sunset with Pop Break's own Marissa Carpico. It would be a nice kind of companion to Manish's epic Before Trilogy podcast that's also coming out this week. And then we're going to be starting to talk about you know, 2021 movies finally. So that's going to be exciting. Can't wait for that. You can also follow my other podcast on this feed called TV Break, which I host with Pop Break editor-in-chief Bill Bodkin and Pop Break TV columnist Josh Cernacki. We talk once a month about the ins and outs of the TV business, so check that out. This past month we talked about the Snoopy Show and other things, so that was fun. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next month.